The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, so welcome. Nice to see you all. Nice to be here, practice together. So today I wanted to talk a little bit about this idea of self-objectification. That is, like sometimes people feel a little bit alienated from themselves or a little bit like, who am I? That kind of a feeling. Maybe even a little bit later in life. But like, wait, I've lived my life doing this particular way, but now I feel a little bit disconnected from myself, or I'm not even sure who I am. This might not be the case too. It's not the case for everybody. But this idea of self-objectification, I just was thinking about this recently, and I'm not an expert in this, but just this recognition that when we objectify people, we kind of like reduce them right to a single trait. And there's a way that sometimes we do that for ourselves. So it's the same thing, right? It's objectifying people. We know that this is not useful, is not helpful. But self-objectification is when like the objectifier and the objectifyee are the same person. Maybe an example might be if we consider ourselves that we are intelligent, or maybe we are intelligent. We have enough intelligence to figure things out, and it might be that in our life, in our professional life, we've gotten rewarded for this, or in our personal life, and we've received attention maybe when we were young in school or whatever it might be. So we find ourselves playing up this part of ourselves. But that maybe the unfortunate part is that we do this at the expense of other aspects of ourselves. So maybe in order we have to somehow feel like we have to demonstrate how smart we are continuously, and we find ourselves lecturing to others or correcting others, or I don't know, something like this. But this thinking of ourselves in just this only one dimension really kind of like we're doing ourselves a disservice. Maybe I don't need to say this, we all know it. But there's a way in which we kind of like flatten ourselves to one dimension instead of being this full, robust human being that has a whole range of qualities and attributes and experiences. So maybe I give the example of maybe just like being intelligent, or you know, maybe being a parent or being a spouse or being a partner or something like this, or certain ways in which we might kind of diminish the fullness, the wholeness of who we are. And we're not going to be happy with our lives as long as we continue to do this. We're going to be dissatisfied. We're going to be, and maybe in some kind of way, feel disconnected from ourselves. If that makes sense. So in this way, this loving kindness practice is a way to make space for all of who we are. And we do that by creating, maybe we could say, a little bit of safety for ourselves, this warm-heartedness. And it doesn't have to be this effusive, ooey-gooey sweetness, but just this, like, it's a sense of it's okay. It's okay. You know, this non-threatening, it's okay. So loving kindness practice, and the way this ends up happening is, it's fascinating. It's something that I just love about this practice is it works when we're doing loving kindness for others. It's just, you know, when we kind of like tap into some warm-heartedness for the those individuals, those beings who might even be imaginary, you know, that maybe those contexts in which our hearts feel warmth and care. And just giving our hearts and our minds that occasion to maybe sink in a little bit. And I like this kind of idea of drink it up in some ways, you know, just with that warmth. I'm using warmth as a really vague word. And I'm using that kind of purposely a vague word so we can, all of us can find our own way with it. So just the experience of having this warm-heartedness is a way that helps create the sense of okayness in which we might feel a little bit more that the fullness of who we are can show up. We can tap into, including those parts that want to do anything but loving kindness practice, right? All the part when all the ill will and hostility and hatred, you know, all that kind of stuff, right? It's, I don't know anybody that's completely gotten rid of all that. And sometimes that's what shows up when we do this practice. But can we hold it with some warm-heartedness? With a commitment to not act out on it, but to hold it with some warm-heartedness. Like, oh yeah, okay, here's that anger, that resentment, that bitterness that's showing up. So that's one way in which we can allow all aspects of ourselves to show up, to get away from this objectification, flattening ourselves into one dimension. And then, of course, the second way is to do loving kindness for ourselves. And for some to turn towards ourselves with some warm-heartedness. So whether it's for others, allowing the heart to feel that warmth in whichever way, or to direct it towards ourselves, for some people is more difficult, not everybody, but for some people that's more difficult and complicated. And whichever way we practice loving kindness practice, it's a way to support this respect and care for, honor for all of who we are. So that we can find our way in this world with not only feeling like we have to show up one way, and so that we can be connected to ourselves. And I think all of us know this, that our best wisdom arises when we're connected to ourselves. How to deal with situations or how to respond to some difficulties. If we're connected to how we're feeling at that moment, who we are as a person, can be a great support, great support. Okay, so with that as an introduction, let's do some loving kindness practice. We'll start with some mindfulness practice, as we always do. I'd like to, you know, start our loving kindness practices this way. But maybe as an aside, I'll say, those of you who have a regular meditation practice, you might find yourself doing the opposite, that maybe you start with some loving kindness to set the mood, set the tone, so to speak, and then go into mindfulness practice, if that's your practice. There's so many different ways we can do this. So I don't want to give the impression that what we do here with when I'm teaching is the only way. Certainly is not the only way. Okay, so taking a posture that feels comfortable, yet has some alertness. Just letting our attention land on the body. How does it feel to be in this body right now, in a global way? Maybe there's some relief to finally stop moving, literally or figuratively. Maybe there's some tiredness maybe there's some happiness, like, oh, I get to practice meditation now, whatever it might be. The body might have some energy that's bubbly or energy that's low. However it is, just tuning in and noticing. And then letting the attention rest on the sensations of breathing. Feeling the expansion, the contraction of the chest, of the abdomen, as the body breathes. It wouldn't be surprising if the mind were to wander. And if so, we don't have to make it a problem. And just very simply, gently, begin again with the sensations of breathing. Just hanging in there, feeling the completeness of an exhale, tuning in to that experience. And then noticing the inhales. How do they feel? Noticing the transitions between inhales and exhales. And then to begin our loving kindness practice. Bring into mind a lovable being, someone for whom it's easy and uncomplicated to feel warm-heartedness towards, feel care, respect, kindness, love, whichever word feels right for you. As I mentioned in the intro, this could be imaginary kittens, puppies, babies. Could be somebody you know and have an uncomplicated relationship. It could be somebody who has touched you in your life with their teachings, or maybe a coach or mentor. Bringing them to mind. Is there a way you can connect with this lovable being? And then to support our cultivating loving kindness, giving the mind something to do so it stays connected, can repeat these phrases. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. If we find our mind wandering, again, with some warm-heartedness, we just begin again, like we do with mindfulness practice. Just begin again with connecting to a lovable being. And saying the phrases. And then to extend our loving kindness to a good friend. Sometimes with friends, our relationships have a little bit more complication. Does it mean we care about them less? We can extend some goodwill toward them as well. Bringing them to mind. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. Checking in with the body and seeing if there's any sense of warmth or openness, spaciousness, ease, even if it's just a small sliver of your experience. Can you allow that to get as big as it would like? Without forcing it, there's no requirements here. But if it is there, allowing that to be a support. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. And then to extend our loving kindness to ourselves. Can we have the same warmth and care that we've been cultivating for others? Can we have that for ourselves? All of ourselves, the completeness of ourselves. Even those little bits that you kind of wish weren't there. Can we, at least for this meditation, wish all of us, all parts of us, or seemingly parts of us, may I be saved. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. Sometimes we might reduce ourselves, our ideas about ourselves, to just one dimension. Can we appreciate and recognize there's lots of dimensions to us? Of course there are. And then to expand our loving kindness to somebody we don't know, somebody we don't have a relationship with. Maybe somebody on this Zoom call, somebody in the neighborhood you see occasionally, whomever it might be. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. for this idea of not objectifying ourselves. It sounds kind of technical using these words, but I there's a way in which kind of reducing ourselves, maybe desiccating, kind of getting some of that without the fullness of what we offer. So it can be helpful to talk about these things, share some of these ideas with others. How was that? Or maybe even this whole idea of self-objectifying. Maybe you've heard of it in other contexts, or maybe it's new to you, or maybe you, you have some ideas about how this might be related to loving kindness for ourselves or for others. There are some of the things that we can talk about. So I'm just a minute here. So you'll be in groups of three. And it can be helpful that if there's a, rather than saying everything that you know about, just to say one thing and then let it go to the next person and they say one thing and then it go to the next person, they say one thing and then it comes back around. And so in this way, there's, you can like learn from each other and have some new ideas, stimulate some new ideas, or as opposed to feeling like you have to say everything that you know all at once. So we'll meet for 13 minutes and here we go.
You are now in the main session.
Okay, so welcome back. Does anybody have a question or comment or something? Yes, Neil.
So, first of all, this was a very interesting practice. What do you do about the parts of you that suck?
Do you have an idea, Neil?
Yelling at other car drivers, a temper.
Do you have an idea of what a person might do with those parts of themselves that suck, quote unquote?
Pretend they don't exist and ignore them.
That's what we all try, right? We all try that.
The ideas that came up in our conversation were, you know, recognize that whatever it is misguided, but a best effort, right? That it's not like you're trying to suck necessarily, you know, and, you know, maybe you can't love that part of you, but you could warmly accept it as being there.
Yeah. But I think if it were that easy, right, you guys wouldn't be coming to a happy hour meditation. But so you're absolutely right. And maybe I'll just add something else. Sometimes it can be helpful to look at what is being helpful about this. So yelling at other drivers maybe is you want everybody to be safe. And you're driving, the way that they're driving is a little bit unsafe. They're going too slow or not turning on their blinkers or whatever it might be. There's maybe a concern for your own safety. And is there a way that you can see that there is some care that is often underneath what are these different ways in which we are acting out? I don't want to be Pollyanna-ish and saying everything we're doing is beautiful because it's not. But it's not so helpful to use this thinking like, oh, I have to be better or this is wrong or, you know, this type of language. Then we just find ourselves getting stuck, right? In this kind of, I should be better, but I'm not better. And that we can not go anywhere with that. So is there a way in which we can shift our perspective And one way to shift our perspective is to see like, okay, so I'm concerned for my own safety. I'm concerned for their safety, for example. Or maybe there's some other way to shift the perspective so it becomes less of a, less getting stuck in a rut with using this type of language with ourselves. Neil, is there something that, I think you understand what I'm pointing to if I'm not able to articulate it so well. But
no, I think it's interesting, right? I mean, so, when I, if I like my temper flares, right? I mean, that seems like it's typically a self-defense action. I think you're right. If I'm the unsafe driver, but how about just the slow driver, right? So I'm impatient to be somewhere, to do something. I think I get an idea. It's difficult, of course, right? Otherwise we wouldn't need to practice.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. So, and maybe there's a way in which after all this loving kindness practice, you can have compassion for yourself. Like, oh, ouch. I just had this flare and now I'm feeling a little bit of remorse. And now I'm feeling like, gee, why did I do that? And if you did end up making an obscene gesture or yelling or something, maybe you feel like, okay, that wasn't my finest moment. And maybe you can feel like, okay, yeah, that's awful to... Maybe awful isn't the right word, but it's uncomfortable to having done that. And then to have some warmheartedness for, okay, this is what it's like to be a person who lost their temper. And instead of feeling like, oh, dang it, and I have to excise that portion of my experience from myself, to find a way to kind of like fold it back in.
That's a beautiful way to look at it. Thank you.
Thank you, Neil. Jerry.
Go. Thank you. Perhaps building on Neil's question in the group, maybe it's just my getting used to the new time zones here with the flip. Early, I wish they stopped changing the clocks, but I was a bit tired. So when you say self-objectification in our group, I looked it up on Dr. Google, as it were. And one of the ones that came back was about, perhaps checking to what you how you appear, worried about these sorts of things. And one of the solutions were to distract yourself. Is that what you were talking about when you mentioned self-objectification? Or is there something else in another context of meaning that you were referring to there about that? So,
yeah. So often self-objectification is with attractiveness. And often it's pointed towards women who just kind of view them, they're always feeling like they're too fat or not pretty enough or something like this because they have been objectified, and then they just internalize it and just view themselves in terms of their attractiveness. So that definitely is, I think, one of the classic ways. I didn't know about this to just distract yourself approach. I don't know. I'd have to, I guess, read more about it or understand more about that, but. Yeah, so that is the same thing. But I wasn't talking about in terms of attractiveness, but certainly people do this with attractiveness as well. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you. That's helpful. I just was wondering what it, they did mention women, and they talked about, well, think of something else, or that was just one of the or probes. I certainly have experienced it as a professional. I don't like being the subject of people's desire. So who does? But unrequited love is not exactly, I don't know.
We could do the self-objectification just as much with our professions. Whatever our professions might be, I'm just making these up, doctor, lawyer, tailor, baker, we just feel like we want everybody to know, hi, I'm so-and-so and I'm a doctor. Or, when we just feel really identified with our profession, kind of like squishing all the fact that maybe we're also a gardener or a parent or a friend or, all these other things too. So it's not just about attractiveness, but whatever trait that we might identify with primarily, and thinking that we have to maybe identifying with a trait or a characteristic, an occupation, there's nothing wrong with that. Of course, we do it. The way to have a happy, healthy life is to pick it up. And when you're in that role, to do that role and then put it down when it's no longer helpful. And often people can't put it down. You know, maybe they walk home and their spouse, you know, they treat their spouse like they do their coworkers, not recognize that, like, no. There's different contexts in which to behave or identify, so to speak, with a particular role. You know, in the Buddhist world, we wouldn't use this word identify, but no, it's true. We take on roles, pick them up, and to be able to put them down. That's the skillful part.
Thank you. That's very helpful. And I think to some degree, it seems cultural, because I was on the street today and someone from France, I was just chatting with them and we were walking in a park and we happened to check. And I asked him, which I think is what in North America happens, I think the third question, I said, what do you do? He was sort of taken back by that. And I thought to myself, oh, in France, you don't ask what you do. The two things, you don't ask how much money you make. I didn't ask that. But you don't ask, what do you do? Like, that scene is seen like, and he was taken back and then he explained. And I thought, oh, yes, in France, you don't ask that. So they're very helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome. Hey, I know that we're over time. And so, but I'm happy to stay and talk about this. So if others would like to as well. So.
Cool. Thanks.
Joe has to go. Okay. Hi, Jim. Yes, Peggy.
I'm wondering about when it's like the opposite, like I don't want to sometimes tell people what I do for money because I don't feel like it's representative of me. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Is that any kind of objectification or not really? Or I don't
maybe know. There's a concern that they will objectify you if they.
Yes, totally. Because I feel like it gives a picture that isn't me.
Yeah. I know that there was a time in my life where I would make up silly stories. I'm a professional bull wrestler or something like this. That was like so obviously not me, right? But so what's a skillful way to do that? Often I'm myself doing non sequiturs or deflecting or something like this, or it's an odd thing. But I think what you're pointing to, Peggy, is this recognition that we don't like this objectification, whether others are objectifying us or whether we're doing it for ourselves, is uncomfortable and doesn't honor and respect all aspects of our experience.
Yeah, maybe I'll go to Europe. Answer the question.
Yeah. Or I will say, you know, in the meditation communities, we don't usually ask each other what our professions are. I've noticed that I don't know what anybody's professions are generally. Of, you know, people that I've known for years and have done stuff with, just I don't know. It just doesn't come up. So there are places here in the United States, there are communities as well. Or let's see. So maybe I could just turn it completely around and say, okay, so maybe they do objectify you, but you don't have to objectify yourself. Maybe they are saying like, oh, you're a doctor. And then I'm just making this up, Peggy, I don't actually know. And then they start telling you all their health problems or something like this. I don't know. This is, you know, kind of how we navigate social niceties, or I'm trying to feel my way into, does somebody have some ideas? If somebody asks you, what is your profession? What do you do? And you feel like, you know what, I don't really want to share. What are some skillful ways that we can respond to that? That's Jerry.
Well, I had, this was, I do think, you know, health and wealth are the two areas that North America recognizes privacy for people because they make judgments about you. It's like privacy around health, and there's lots of laws around that, and privacy around money because they may treat you differently. But the other part, and of course, if you're in the public domain, like a politician, all bets are off. But I had, for what it's worth, I had a little vignette. I had a 96-year-old aunt who had a Witzerweather. She taught me mathematics, and she looked much younger than her stated age. And so age is another way that people judge, you know, like how old are you, or they think how old you are. And so she was at she played bridge, and she was playing bridge in her 90s, and had a girlfriend who was 68. And she was talking about at the bridge, or see that guy over there, you know, he used to be good at bridge, but, you know, ever since he turned 80, he's slipping a bit. And so the example that she went on to say, so I said, how do you deal with it when people ask your age? I changed the topic.
Yeah.
And she said, her comment was to my aunt, said, well, she said to Kay, she said, hopefully when we're that age, we're dead and gone. My aunt at that point was 90, and this person was 68. And she said, and so she was like, I said, what'd you do? I just changed the topic.
Yeah.
So that's one technique.
It requires us to be on our toes a little bit too. Yeah. You know, I wish Peggy, I had something wise to say, but I'm changing the topic.
Yeah, this is good, because I got some input and. And really, what do I care what they think of me?
That's part of it too, right?
And sometimes I say, oh, I hike and I go to meditation hall. And they're like, really? You're retired? You don't have to work? Anyway, enough for me. Thank you.
I have to go. Thank you, everyone. Yes. Thank you, Diana.
Good night, Diana.
Good night.
Why don't we call it an evening here? So I go, well, I'll say goodbye. So thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you all.
Thanks, Diana.
Good night. Take care, everyone.
Thanks, Diana.
Bye.
Thanks, Peggy.
Thank you.
Bye, guys. Nice to see you.
Bye.
See you.